Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Good day, Colorado, and thank you for joining us for the April 9th reading of The Environment, a collection of articles from Mother Earth News, The Nature Conservancy, and the magazine of the Sierra Club. My name is John. Today we'll share the following main articles: Is Recycling Worth It? From Mother Earth News, and also from the magazine of the Sierra Club, Planting Trees in Minnesota is Harder Than It Sounds. With any remaining time, we'll pick something from the Nature Conservancy or Mother Earth News. So let's get started with our first article today from Mother Earth News. Is recycling worth it? You may be wondering, is recycling worth it? There are many things we can recycle, but some are more worthwhile than others, depending on the energy needed to reuse them. Article was written by Joanna Punkovich. When Donald Sanderson, a former city councilman in Woodbury, New Jersey, led the effort to make recycling mandatory in the late 1970s, he was called names at city council meetings and criticized by the local press. Irate citizens dumped trash on his lawn. He persisted, however, and the law helped Woodbury save thousands of dollars in landfill costs, preventing the city from having to raise taxes or cut services. Since then, the public's perception of the value of giving waste a second life has itself transformed, and recycling has diverted dramatic amounts of garbage from landfills. By 2012, we were recycling or composting almost 35% of the 251 million tons of trash generated annually in the United States. That's 87 million tons of solid waste, or the equivalent savings of more than 1.1 quadrillion BTU of energy, the amount of energy consumed by about 10 million U.S. households in a year. Dylan DeThomas, editorial director of Resource Recycling, says recycling is no longer just an end-of-the-pipe process to save space in landfills. More and more, people are looking at a product's entire life cycle, says DeThomas, referring to a growing movement known as sustainable materials management. This includes how long a product lasts, what greenhouse gassing occurs during its usage, and then, at the end of its useful life, how to manage the material so that it can go to its highest and best use, such as a plastic bottle turned into another plastic bottle, as opposed to becoming a lower quality item such as strapping. Sustainable materials management. So, is recycling worth it? In short, yes. But to keep it effective, the way we think about waste must shift away from mindless consumption. Even as we're recycling more, we're creating more garbage. 4.38 pounds per person per day in 2012, up 63% from 2.68 pounds in 1960. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, the total amount of garbage for the same period increased by 183% from 88.1 million tons in 1960 to 251 million tons in 2012. To cut back on most material, adopt a BYOC mentality. Bring your own containers, such as cloth sacks or glass jars, to grocery stores for transporting produce, bulk foods, and meats and cheeses from the deli counter. Take containers to restaurants for carting home leftovers. Purchase reusable drink canisters. Try your hand at making your own condiments, body care concoctions, and cleaning products. Read on to find extra reduction tips for when you can't cut consumption. When you do recycle, keep in mind that some substances are more worthwhile to recycle than others, depending on the energy required to extract the raw material and the environmental footprint the substance leaves behind. Following is a list of materials, information about the worth of recycling each one, and tips for how to follow the three R's in the right order: reduce, reuse, and finally, recycle. Recycling glass. Is it worth it? Absolutely. Glass is made from all natural materials and can be recycled endlessly into new glass. Recycled glass can replace 95% of raw materials needed to make new glass. Reusing 6 tons of recycled glass to form new glass reduces carbon dioxide emissions by 1 ton compared with using virgin materials. Recycling just 10 glass containers can save enough energy to operate a television for 2 hours and 13 minutes. Reduce. Use bottle deposit systems, such as those offered at some grocery stores for milk. Also, many breweries and some wineries allow customers to refill beverage bottles, as opposed to buying new bottles when purchasing from a liquor store. Reuse. Glass jars can become all manner of useful household items, such as vases or stackable storage containers. And, of course, glass jars are some of the best vessels for delivering drinks from spout to mouth and for storing your leftovers. Recycle. Don't toss non-container glass, such as light bulbs, window glass, ovenware, or crystal, into the bin, as it can cause problems for processors of used glass containers. Instead, if it's still intact, seek out local recycling alternatives, use it in a DIY project, or donate it to a second-hand store. Recycling metals. Is it worth it? Definitely. Most scrap aluminum cans are used to make new cans. Producing aluminum from raw materials is energy intensive, and making products from recycled aluminum uses a whopping 90% less energy. Recycling just 6 aluminum cans saves enough energy to power an air conditioner for 1 hour or a laptop computer for 31 hours. Steel can also be recycled infinitely without any loss of quality, and recycling 1 ton of steel conserves 2,500 pounds of iron ore, 1,400 pounds of coal, and 120 pounds of limestone. Reduce. Can your own foods in reusable glass canning jars and cook dry beans purchased in bulk instead of buying their canned counterparts. Replace canned carbonated beverages with a home soda making machine, such as this SodaStream. You can also buy recycled aluminum foil. Reuse. You can wash and reuse aluminum foil and aluminum dishes and trays. Recycle. Recycling aluminum is efficient, so salvage as much as you can. In some states, you can redeem aluminum cans for money, usually 5 to 10 cents a piece. For other metals, locate a local scrapyard that will take your scrap metal. You may receive cash for your efforts, and some metals, such as copper, are especially valuable. Recycling paper. Is it worth it? Yes. Every ton of recycled paper saves the energy equivalent of 165 gallons of gasoline or enough energy to power the average U.S. home for 6 months. According to the EPA, recycling paper causes 35% less water pollution and 74% less air pollution than making paper from raw materials. Recycled paper supplies about 1/3 of the materials used to make other U.S. paper products, and paper can be recycled 5 to 7 times before its fibers become too short. Reduce. In lieu of paper towels, use washable rags to clean surfaces. Rather than buying new books, borrow them from the library or peruse a used bookstore. Purchase recycled paper for your home and office and print on both sides of a page before recycling it. Reuse. Projects for reclaimed paper range from practical to ornamental. Used paper can become a pot for seedlings or packing to place around delicate items you ship. You can even turn it into brand new paper, learning how in Making Paper at Home. Recycle. You do not need to remove staples. Keep paper with food residue out of your bin. Compost it instead. Follow local guidelines because you may need to sort different kinds of paper into different bins. Recycling plastics. Is it worth it? Barely. As pervasive as plastic is, the setup to recycle it is dismal, and plastic can only be recycled a finite number of times. At this point in time, plastics recycling is still a terribly inefficient and incomplete operation with little to no opportunity for recycling certain types of plastic in many communities, writes Michael San Clemens, an ecologist at the University of Colorado Boulder and the author of Plastic Purge. Plastics are made primarily from petroleum. In the United States, the average person disposes of almost 30 pounds of plastic bottles per year. By weight, plastics made up 13% of our total 251 million tons of trash in 2012, but only accounted for about 3% of what we recycled. We recycled only 9% of total plastic waste. Because there are 7 different types of plastic, indicated by the number ranging from 1 to 7 stamped onto each product, sorting them properly is important. Missorted plastics can contaminate the recycling stream and cause damage to recycling equipment. Perhaps most dismaying of all, plastic never goes away. It breaks down into pieces too small to be seen by the naked eye. These particles find their way into our oceans, our food supply, and our bodies. Even most so-called biodegradable plastics are environmentally harmful and only break down when subjected to heat in commercial facilities, where very few biodegradable plastics actually end up. Reduce. Instead of bottled water, purchase a water filter and learn to love your tap water. Buy milk in returnable glass bottles. Replace plastic baggies with cloth alternatives. Bypass plastic shopping bags. Beth Terry, author of Plastic Free, has many more tips for getting plastic out of your life on her blog, My Plastic Free Life. Reuse. If you do use plastic baggies, wash and reuse them. Recycle. While reducing plastic is especially vital, recycling it is still better than throwing it away. Follow local guidelines to learn which types of plastic your recycling facility will accept, and pay attention to the numbers on the containers and their corresponding receptacles. Recycling electronics. Is it worth it? Yes. Electronic components are a valuable resource. 1 million recycled cell phones can provide 35,000 pounds of copper, 772 pounds of silver, 75 pounds of gold, and 33 pounds of palladium. Extracting metals from electronics results in significant greenhouse gas savings over having to take them from virgin sources, says DeThomas. Electronics must be recycled responsibly, or the cost could outweigh the benefits. Some e-waste recyclers outsource the heavy metal extraction and thus the toxicity involved overseas to developing areas, which entails a host of environmental and human rights issues. Reduce. Before discarding used electronics, try to have them repaired. Consider upgrading your computer's hardware rather than buying an entirely new system. Reuse. Locate donation bins for phones at electronic stores and phone retailers. Recycle. Don't just toss devices into the trash. Electronics that are not disposed of properly can leach heavy metals into the environment. Find a store near you that accepts electronics recycling. Follow 5 R's. Refuse, reduce, reuse, recycle, rot. The total annual household garbage for zero waste zealot B. Johnson fits into a quart jar, and she's reduced her family's recycling to a bare minimum, too. We don't buy food in packaging. We don't use plastic. And we buy secondhand, she says. We found ourselves to be healthier, with more time and money, living lives based on experience rather than stuff. Johnson, author of Zero Waste Home, The Ultimate Guide to Simplifying Your Life by Reducing Your Waste, also writes about her lifestyle on her blog, Zero Waste Home. Herein is a photo of the Johnson's home, a shelf of 4 or 5 shelves, filled with family favorites while avoiding wasteful packaging, which creates an appealing pantry. She has some of those ball jars, tall ones, short ones, some glass containers, and a few aluminum containers filled with food goods. The Johnsons follow the 5 R's instead of the usual 3 in order. refuse what they don't need, reduce what they do need, reuse by avoiding disposables and buying secondhand, recycling what they can't refuse, and rot or compost what's left. While she hasn't totally achieved her goal of producing absolutely no waste, Johnson says she's elated by the power she has over her decisions. Her family lives in a 1,400-square-foot house in Marin County across the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco, a city with high zero-waste ambitions. I think we might be able to fit the entirety of this next article in. This comes to us from the Magazine of the Sierra Club and is titled, "Planting Trees in Minnesota is Harder Than It Sounds." As climate change threatens trees across the state, foresters have a plan. The missing piece? Seed collectors. Written by Sophie Hartley. Natalie Kim has already begun blocking out weeks in their calendar for this season's seed harvest. From May to November, they will spend over a month in Minnesota's forests and some people's backyards, collecting bushels of acorns, samaras, cherries, and walnuts. But before the northern forests drop their bounties, Kim, a seed scout at the Nature Conservancy, must come up with a game plan. They're locating tree species across the state, seeking out picking locations, and getting permissions from landowners and land managers to collect. This year, their small team is hoping to gather almost 2 million tree seeds. This number does not even capture the full need for seed, Kim explained. As climate change makes Minnesota's weather warmer and more volatile, the state's forests are struggling to survive. Reforestation can help address the gaps left behind. Local scientists are planting new trees to enhance fish and wildlife habitat, prevent soil erosion, and keep communities and waterways healthy. The Minnesota Million Project, a coalition supported by federal, state, and local agencies, is on a mission to reforest 1 million acres of the state, which will require about 780 million trees. A subset of this enterprise, the Climate Smart Seedling Production Network, is bolstering the reforestation effort with Climate Smart Seedlings, trees adapted to better survive the warmer temperatures. But planting even just one tree requires a seed, and they are in short supply. Tree seed collection has plummeted in the U.S., creating instability at the very beginning of the reforestation supply chain. So Kim's team at the Nature Conservancy, along with scientists and foresters from local farms and the University of Minnesota, is building its own supply chain from the ground up. Forests on the move. This is not the first time Minnesota's climate has changed. Weather conditions have been shifting across the globe for millions of years, but historically, these changes were usually slow enough for forests to keep up. Historical evidence shows that during the ice ages, as the northern edge of North American forests got colder, some forests migrated south. While individual trees did not pack up and move, seedlings likely prospered in the warmer southern end of their ranges, creeping their forests farther and farther down the continent. Now that the climate is changing faster than ever recorded, modern forests are struggling to keep up. It's hard to imagine that trees are going to be able to migrate naturally fast enough, given how much more rapid climate change is now, said Julie Ederson, an ecological geneticist at the University of Minnesota Duluth. By some estimates, Minnesota has lost almost half of its forests since the 19th century. Agriculture, urban development, and logging have played a big part, but temperatures in Minnesota have climbed dramatically since then too, by about 3 degrees Fahrenheit on average. Climate change's impact on weather patterns is becoming a particularly potent threat. Recently, late-season droughts have weakened trees' immune systems and made it difficult for some species, like birch, to survive the onslaught of native insects. Invasive pests add a new layer of horror. Aspen trees are declining, balsam firs are dying off, and on the edges of Minnesota's swamplands, black ashes are struggling to survive. The long-term forecasts are not good for Minnesota, said Ederson. There's mortality on the ground, and we have overall forest loss. Some scientists think that because climate change has already rapidly changed the state's climate, it's possible local trees are not well-suited to their current homes, which could be contributing to their decline. Ederson's research helped elucidate this idea. Southern and central Minnesota's current climate almost mimics what the northern part of the state felt like 50 years ago, she explained. By transplanting 110,000 seeds from southern Minnesota up north, her team was able to compare their growth side by side with local trees for 6 years. For the most part, the southern material did better than the local material, she said. The process of moving forests, called assisted migration, has been controversial in the field of forestry. Getting data to show that trees adapt to localized climates was a game changer. Ederson was able to show that assisted migration works. Because many seeds from southern Minnesota seem to grow better in northern Minnesota, some reforesters want to plant these climate-smart seedlings by the millions. This could ensure a longer lifespan for the trees while bolstering carbon sequestration, increasing biodiversity, and even supporting the timber trade. If we're reforesting anyway, said Ederson, why not use materials that will do well in the future? The need for seed. Building the Climate Smart Seedling Production Network, however, has proved difficult. For one, there are millions of seeds to gather and only 3 full-time seed scouts out collecting. Once acquired, the seeds need to be transported, processed, overwintered, distributed, sown, grown, and planted. It's a ton of work, said Mary Hams, the Reforestation Strategy Manager at the Nature Conservancy, who coordinates the Minnesota Million Project. We are not, and were not, collecting enough seed or producing enough seedlings anywhere close to being able to meet those goals. One of the biggest challenges is a workforce shortage. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources still pays individuals to collect seed, but the pool of collectors has shrunk, Hams explained. It's this invisible thing, she said. Hams has seen people who grew up collecting and selling seed age out of the practice. Plus, younger generations are more likely to face a green wall when they look at a forest. For people who have not spent a lifetime crawling around the woods, an army of trees might appear as a monotonous green mass. But once people learn about the individual species, the forest can come into sharper focus. Skills like species identification, which can help foragers know which tree will drop an acorn versus a walnut, are critical when it comes to seed collection. There has also been a massive movement away from seedling production in the United States. A 2021 study found that the U.S. now produces fewer than half the number of seedlings it did in 1980. Modern forestry funding is often funneled to other types of projects, and the capacity for tree nurseries to produce seedlings is shrinking. The programs that created market signals for folks to collect seed have been disinvested in, said Hams. The seeds that do get collected for the network are usually transported to the northern part of the state, where they are grown into seedlings by individuals and local farmers. Once you've completed the tricky task of acquiring a seedling, it's almost just as difficult to find a place to put it. A report from the Nature Conservancy identified about 2 million acres that could be reforested in Minnesota. Typically, these are areas that were forested at one point and could now be replanted. Often, Hams learned, this sort of land is privately owned. There are so many goals like, let's plant trees, and it always sounds like such a lovely thing to do, but one of the most difficult pieces is actually finding and negotiating appropriate land for that, she said. Now, the Minnesota Million Coalition is trying to re-incentivize seed collection and seedling production and finally work with landowners to plant the new growth. Greasing the chain. This summer, Kira Pollock, a University of Minnesota extension forester and educator, will helm the first official training efforts for aspiring seed collectors. Through virtual sessions and in-person workshops, she'll help outdoor enthusiasts, natural resource specialists, students, retirees, and curious families learn how to collect viable, climate-smart seeds from southern and central Minnesota. Pollock said she plans to start by looking at silver maples. She'll push would-be collectors to start thinking like a squirrel. Does it look good, or is it decayed? Is there something munching on it? How do you know if this is a good tree to collect from? The project includes identifying popular resilient trees in addition to silver maples and then convincing landowners to plant them. The list includes black cherries, a few species of oaks, yellow birches, and black walnuts. Supported by volunteers and a handful of other scouts, Natalie Kim from the Nature Conservancy is doing a great deal of seed collection. This season, they will take a car stuffed with paper maps, binoculars, ladders, buckets, and sometimes a tent to countless collection sites across the state. It's rewarding knowing that we're helping build Minnesota's future and taking care of living things, said Kim, who expects to spend 3 to 7 hours a day gathering seeds. But also, the experience itself is very enjoyable to me. The mosquitoes, a little bit less. And that does fill our time for the day. Thank you so much for joining us for the April 9th reading of The Environment. My name is John.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.